Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the latest Kitchen Garden podcast. And I'm here, as usual, with Tony, who's sitting in another shed somewhere in Lincolnshire. And we've got a special guest today, Hugh Richards. We've been itching to talk to for quite some time. And Hugh's obviously a gardener. He's also a prolific YouTuber and permaculture expert. And well, there's no ends to the strings in his bow, I don't think, his horticultural bow. So we're here to have a chat and ask him some questions. So welcome, Hugh.
Thank you. I think when it starts entering ornamental territory, that's where my skill set starts to fall off the side of a cliff. So
yeah, don't worry. Ditto.
Yeah, that's three of us, them. Hugh.
Oh, perfect. Of course, thanks for having me on.
No, it's a real pleasure. So we've been waiting ever since we got a copy of your book, which I think Tony's got with him there. So we've been itching to talk to you about that, and often look at what's your YouTube channel,
The Vegetable Growers Handbook.
Oh yeah, an excellent book. And I hope everyone who's listening to this, if they're a KG reader, will have seen an excerpt from the book in KG not so long ago on mildew control, which we might get onto in a little while. So, Hugh, what got you into gardening? Are you from a gardening background? I'm thinking you are.
Well, so do you guys remember The Good Life on TV?
Oh, absolutely.
The Good Life.
Yeah. Tony's too young, sorry.
I do remember it, yeah.
So that kind of inspired my parents quite a lot. That got my parents into the dream, as well as John Seymour's book of self-sufficiency. And so before they moved to where they are now, which is where I grew up and fell in love with gardening, they had a terraced house with a front lawn that they just ripped out and completely redid into a garden. And what wasn't nice when they left, someone just cleared it out and put it back to a lawn. And then someone else bought it, and they were redoing the kitchen, and a photograph of how my parents had the garden had fallen down the back cupboard. And they were so amazed by how nice the garden looked. And so they messed it back again to how it was when my parents had it. So that's quite funny.
Yeah. Did you mention John Seymour's book, Self-Sufficiency?
Yeah.
I used to love that when I was, first got into gardening. Because it used to have a fantastic
picture. Used to.
I haven't looked at it for a long time, but it used to have great pictures of a 1 acre garden, I think, and was it a 3 acre? Now I used to read it to my kids on a Saturday morning, look at the pictures and dream of having a small holding. It's a fantastic book, absolutely.
Yeah, it's certainly caused quite a mini wave / revolution in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all dream of a garden like that. But
I suppose round Aberystwyth, probably in the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of people coming into the area.
It was small holding central. I mean, that kind of back to the question of how I got into gardening. So that was like my parents' side, and they then got a small holding. They always wanted to have a family in Wales. My granddad is Welsh, which is why my middle name is Griffith, and why my first name is not spelt Hugger. I was kind of age of two or three. There's a photo of me in a red onesie just looking at a raised bed, and I had no idea how significant that would become. But I was so inspired by how you just get a small seed and you'd plant it and it'd grow into something you could eat. I thought it was utter magic. I was hooked. Yeah. I just couldn't, especially during summer, I couldn't wait for school to finish so I could go back and spend an evening in the garden with my dad.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah,
oh, amazing. Yeah, yeah. And you So looking at your YouTube channels and things, obviously you've got enormous amount of information just on growing veg generally, but you're always experimenting as well. It seems like, you know, you're always trying to always challenging the sort of conventional wisdom and trying something new just to see if that's a better, cheaper, easier way of doing things.
It's really fun. It's really fun being a bit of a non-conformist in the gardening world. I think the thing that powers me the most is I kind of have a deep sense of curiosity. And I use that as my motivation. There's a thing when I do talks recently, and it's coming out in a video very soon, where everyone's heard of the saying curiosity kills the cat, or curiosity killed the cat.
Yeah.
Do you, Steve, or do you, Tony, know the second part of that saying?
I don't know.
No, I don't.
No one does. Yeah, it's called, well, the second part of the saying is, and satisfaction brought it back.
Oh,
curiosity killed the cat, and satisfaction brought it back. However, conveniently, the second part is being obviously missed out. So it's, I think people very much grow up thinking it's bad to be curious because curiosity killed the cat. And it's just like, it's like a throwaway statement. But I am a massive advocate for curiosity. I think anyone who is passionate about something, be it food or, you know, whatever hobby it is, they have curiosity as well. I really think it's like the secret sauce, in a sense. The not so secret sauce. And the thing about a garden, every single garden is different. It has its own opportunities, has its own challenges, and it has its own gardener or group of gardeners. And I think the way to like really tap into your space is to let your own curiosity guide you with how you want to approach that garden.
Absolutely. Tell us about your plots then. Have you got your, is it an allotment or have you got your own garden? What do you do?
Well, good question. We have, right now we're in the transition phase. So when I say we, I mean myself and my team. So the first year all started off in my dad's kitchen garden that I then took over and built him another garden so he could keep on growing food. garden. It's a good film set. So to have it, it was like fine. That's kind of where a lot of the videos in the past especially happened. We're now on the second year of a project of a piece of land that we're developing, and it's quite a big chunk. It's 7 acres in size. But it is more than just horticulture. So my passion really now is kind of heading towards regenerative agriculture. I'm always going to have a kitchen garden, absolutely, but I'm really passionate about and curious about how we can look at larger areas of landscape to not just improve biodiversity in nature, but to still feed communities and reconnect people with the seasons, in a sense. So there's a few different things we're doing there. We've got like this bottom 2 acres, which is very much horticulture focused. We've planted over 120 fruit trees. We're now planning a 3/4 acre vineyard to plant next year. We're just having a lot of fun. It's very much an experimental site. We've got 4 polytunnels. We've got a half-size allotment plot garden, which is my most exciting project that I'm involved with this year. And you'll just have to wait because that's going to be my next one, which comes out next year. I just love it. I was there earlier today, came back so we could have this conversation, and I'm going straight next because it's 10 minutes down the road.
Gosh, I know you mentioned there regenerative gardening or agriculture in this case. I hate to admit it, but I'm a bit unclear about what that is. Is it sort of combining?
Yeah, essentially. So sustainability as a word is like massively overused, and I think it's lost its value and it's lost its meaning. Everyone just uses it as a buzzword. It's like Oh, look at this 50% recycled bottle. Could look really sustainable. You know, I just shut up, honestly. Just it isn't going to improve the world, you know, nothing like that. And there's not one thing that is going to improve the world. It's a lot of different things add up. So the idea with regenerative is a clue in the name. It's about regenerating. It's about constant improvements rather than just reporting or greenwashing. It's about actually making action. So every year you see improvements, whether that's sequestering carbon or increasing the biodiversity index of a certain space. And so for me, that's a far more like a proactive, measurable way where it's an approach to generation where it gets to a stage that you then become sustainable, because sustainable is about sustaining the current state. If we're wanting to be sustainable now, we're just wanting to sustain our current state. No, we're trying to regenerate it, get it to a better state where we can then move back to calling things sustainable. Want over.
And that's something that obviously ordinary gardeners can start to do on a smaller scale in their own plots.
Well, I think I think this is really important to get across. So growing your own food is one of the best things you can do. So when I say like regenerative agriculture, that is out of touch for most gardeners, because most gardeners, it's like back garden or allotment, and that's very different. So with a garden, simply the act of growing your own food is one of the, I think, one of the best things you can do. Yes, of course, you know, reducing food miles, etc. But just being outside, and kind of regenerating your soul a little bit. I always feel like a garden is my escape from a busy world. And it's important for everyone to have that opportunity. I think it should definitely be a right that everyone has the ability to tend to or cultivate some form of green space or community garden in a sense. But I think one of the other things that there's a lot of heated debate about is you've got the traditional dig group versus the traditional versus like the no diggers. And we spend way too much time trying to, you know, talk about which method is best. And I will be honest, I think we just need to cut out the fluff and say, if you're growing your own food.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Doesn't matter what method you're doing it, the fact that you're growing food is amazing. That should be celebrated. don't feel bad because you don't fit into a certain box, which is almost why I'm kind of going against the grain and being very experimental. And, you know, I am broad forking some of my raised beds this year because I can't always have food growing over them. And, you know, when you've got plants in the soil, that's the best thing you can do for soil health. But sometimes it isn't particular, or especially with some of the winters we get to actually have plants all the time. And so we get a lot of rain. Rain can lead to soil compaction. And so I feel that it's perfectly okay to do some board forking just to help aerate it a little bit. But, you know, I've mentioned that to some people and they go all up in arms about it. And I'm just like, we're just gardeners at the end of the day. It's important that we have fun. And I think it's also important to take a reality check. For a lot of us, at the end of the day, we're trying to produce food to feed our families. And so you've got to take the pragmatic approach that is suitable to the context in which you're in and suitable to the budget in which you have. And so I am a massive like believer to any gardener to like, if they feel like they should do something because of a certain challenge that they face and it doesn't quite fit into the box of dig or like no dig, don't worry about it because what you're doing is growing food. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
That's really reassuring.
Well, I think there is a danger, you know, with gardening and gardening books and everything really to do with gardening is it gets very prescriptive. And there's old school ways of doing it, and that's the only way. And I think what you're saying, Hugh, and to be honest, I think Stephanie last time we had a podcast was saying somewhat similar, you know, liberate yourself from being too blinkered about how you approach things. Like you say.
Yeah, because what happens, you miss out on everything around the fringes. It's like, you know, if I sat down, I could probably like maybe write out 50 different ways of growing a potato.
Yes.
And this is the other thing that there's like, there could be, because that there could be a method that that there's people that are gardening and they're not quite feeling it. But there might be, you know, a method of growing potatoes that they really enjoy and they're quite curious about. And so that's a nice kind of entry into it. The other thing that I like, when I saw Stephanie Haverty, I think it was last year, we were having a chat, and I loved what she had to say about self-sufficiency, is that she was saying along the lines of, and this is just me paraphrasing, of that she actually quite likes not being completely self-sufficient in everything, because it means she can go to her local town, and she can speak to people, and she can have that community engagement, and you can swap things, and I think it is really important. I think something that should be looked at more is co-sufficiency. So it's like community-based sufficiency rather than trying to isolate yourself. In this day and age, it does not make sense to just isolate yourself. Instead, it's about a collaborative approach.
So with the produce that you're going to get from your 7 acres, is that going to be then spread throughout the community? Is that the idea?
Oh, yeah. Well, one thing that we do at least a monthly volunteer day. So a load of people come over and we cook them a nice big lunch so they can enjoy the flavours of the seasons from the space. My colleague Sam, he's a professional chef. Right next to me, to my right, this is Test Kitchen. So we're doing a lot of very experimental cooking, food preserving techniques. One goal we'd like to do a supper club, which will be a lot of fun. And then we do like a staff veg box scheme when the harvest start coming in, and we supply a little bit to a couple of local restaurants. And this year we're going to do, well, we're hoping to do a bit of a foodie veg box scheme. So it's essentially a veg box for foodies where they get to try flavors that they just could never buy from a shop.
Wow. Yeah. Will you be running courses there, Hugh, or do you do that already?
No, haven't done any courses there at the moment. I think perhaps just because it's the project now is about 14 months old, it still needs a bit of time to mature. I'd like it in My goal in 2 years is to be able to open up things like a National Garden Scheme and involve people. But, you know, It take especially well, the reason why we've put in so many perennials over the last year is because they take time to mature, but when they do mature, it just like it fits in so nicely. And so give it another 2 years for it to start to like mature and settle, and then people can come.
So you do this full time, presumably, you?
Full time and more.
Full time and more, yeah. Very healthy living, though.
Yeah, most of the time. unless it's like today and I forgot that I had a video deadline, so I'm off to film and then edit that tonight, because that'll be quite fun. But you know, it's I can't complain. It's a lot of fun. If I ever do take on too much, it's always my own fault. So I accept the responsibility.
Yeah. But you've got so many videos up already. It was funny because at the weekend when I knew I was going to be talking to you, I spent a lot of the 3 day weekend digging out ground elder from a plot and from a garden. And I was thinking, right, I'm going to ask you what he'd do with all this ground elder. And I had a look on your YouTube site, and there was a I think it was a newish video about making liquid feed from weeds, you know, about putting them in a bucket. So you kind of answered my question, I guess. I should be making liquid feed from a weeds, and
Why not? I mean,
you call a weed,
it's great because. Yeah. I think there's a couple of really ridiculous things that have happened recently. One was slugs aren't pests. And I'm like, well, yeah, there were some slugs that aren't pests, but as a gardener, a slug is a pest if it's eating. And it's a pest. The other one is this whole hoo-ha about weeds, which I find really hilarious. sometimes in my videos, I'll be like pulling out a dandelion that, you can eat that. I'm like, yeah, but I'd rather eat what I'm planting in place of the dandelion. The dandelion, and like, you know, I don't mind if it's in the lawn or in the pathway, but it's just one of those things that I just find really funny. I guess the definition that they like of a weed is that it's a plant growing in the wrong place, in a sense. But I think it gets. The reason why I think it's actually a little bit dangerous to say there's no such thing as a weed and slugs aren't pests is actually when it comes to new gardeners, because it very much kind of muddies the water with them actually knowing what advice to follow at the start. And the most important thing is to get the first harvest under the belt and to feel like they can get into a routine before they can then branch off into the permaculture techniques or stuff. And so I think it's really important to be quite clear with the messaging of what weeds are, what pests are, just to help new gardeners. Otherwise, it's very easy to forget that there's people next year who are going to get an allotment who've never grown before. And now they've got all of this stuff saying, oh, no such thing as pests and no such thing as weeds. And like, do I keep this nettle growing in my weeds bed? That's why I kind of like to just, when I make my videos, I just try and make it as clear as possible, and to just outline options so it's quite easy for the viewer to think, okay, I can do this with that, in a sense.
Well, I can't believe we're running out of time already, Hugh. I had so many things I wanted to ask you, and I do want to ask you where before we, you know, get kicked off here. Where can readers find out more from you? We've mentioned YouTube. I think you write a blog as well, don't you?
I did. I can't keep up with that at the moment. I have my responsibility to my publisher. And essentially the way I approach writing books is, because it's non-fiction, it's every two or three pages of information is like its own blog post, in a sense. And then I write lots of blog posts and then I make a chapter and I'm like, oh, there we go. So, yeah, all of my blog posts are in the format of a book. You can find me on Instagram over at Hugh's Garden as well.
Lovely. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Yep, great. Will you be going to shows this year? I know a few of our writers are off to Malvern this week. I'd love to have gone. I haven't managed to get there this year, but
The only show I'm going to this year that I know of is the Chelsea Flower Show on Monday and Tuesday, and that will definitely be my yearly quota of socialisation time.
Yeah,
it's already half filled after going to the garden press event, so I'm like,
yes,
I like just being out in the garden, to be honest. I like a nosy. Don't get me wrong. I do like a little nosy. But it's quite far away. And if I am going away, I kind of like to go to somewhere where I can just eat lots of food and like look at mountains.
Oh, well, who can blame you? That's absolutely amazing. Yeah. Oh, well, thanks so much for talking to us, Hugh. Times are short, but it's been really great. And if we ever get the chance to talk to you again, that would be amazing. We've got a stack of questions we need to ask you.
Anytime. Yeah.
I've got a feature to write, and I need to blag some information before I write it. So I'll come to you first, and then pretend I thought of it all.
yeah, that's a cunning strategy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks again. Cheers, it's been great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, mate.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Bye bye.
You too.
Bye.
You too.
Bye.
Well, we hope you enjoyed our podcast. If you did and you'd like to know more about Kitchen Garden Magazine, pop along to www.classicmagazines.co.uk and you can take advantage of some subscription offers there. Or if you go to Readly, that's readly.com/gardening. Readly is currently giving 2 months of unlimited reading to over 7,000 digital magazines and newspapers, including top gardening titles like Kitchen Garden Magazine, with a special offer which lasts until the 31st of May. So if you'd like to know more about that, as I say, pop along to readly.com/gardening and you can get 2 months of unlimited reading until the 31st of May 23. So in the meantime, thanks for listening and happy gardening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.